this may be our last chance to provide the means of saving civilization from annihilation.
There's much we can learn from each other.
One of those moments in history.
We are all together out on the internet.
Can there be a peace between us?
You were an eyewitness.
The people who grew up with the technology.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
A worldwide broadcasting system.
This is for you, for my way.
Please keep in touch.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Network's Thinking Through the Trees show. And I'm excited to welcome to the program Michael Chappie. Michael, how are you? You missed last week's episode, kind of pilot episode of The Sopranos, SopranoCon. But really, I think it's perfect because this week's not about The Sopranos. It's about the Mr. Rogers movie. And the surprise is I got to go on the red carpet screening for A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, Pittsburgh special screening. It was a last-minute thing. Got an email at 11:30 at night saying, hey, you want to go on the carpet? I was talking to Anthony Griggs. I'm helping him write his book. And I'm like, okay, yeah. So it was an interesting experience, and I can't wait to tell you about it. So how are you, Michael?
Good. How are you?
Hey, you know what? From last night, it's just I sometimes love to just be a hermit in my studio. Maybe I have that radio bug into me, and like, you know, going out when you have to kind of dress up, and then you also got to kind of, you know, it's a lot of work for sure compared to just being in this place and kind of just having a conversation on the radio. But great experience for sure. So go ahead and I guess ask me the first question about, I guess, arriving, you go and throw questions at me, and I'll go from there.
So, did you know what this movie was about going in?
not enough time to prep. Get on the red carpet, and you think there's gonna be all these journalists, and you're thinking, okay, I'm thinking Juju Smith-Schuster's. I'm thinking, you know, Mr. Rogers. Everyone in Pittsburgh is gonna come. If I was running it, if I was promoting it. You know, whoever is the coordinator, the South Side Theater is a decent theater, but ultimately I thought that more Who's Who Pittsburgh people would be out here, and they weren't because of promotion. And it goes back to, I guess, in the middle of the week, that's not the best compared to like a weekend type deal. So I had no idea about the film. I show up. This is what they do. They don't have a sheet for me because I was a last minute add on, but I guess I'll take it. Right. I mean, for sure. 10 years to get to be able on a red carpet. So I'm like, who's going to be here? They hand me this sheet, and it has pictures of different people, the director, producers, writers, Mrs. Rogers, Senator Jay Costa, who I didn't even see show up, Mayor Bill Peduto, Amy Hollingsworth, who wrote a book called Simple of Faith. These will all be in the interviews. Wayne Brzenka, who's an artist that painted the mural of Mr. Rogers. And my if you go follow Simply G on Facebook, his Facebook page, GJ Reynolds fan Facebook page, he has a really good story showing that photo. Painting he painted. It was phenomenal. I didn't get to see it. I just interviewed him on the carpet. And then you have Tom Janode, who the whole story was about, Billy Eisler, who is the guy who's the right hand man of Mr. Rogers, and the writers, who were phenomenal. But again, I'm like, okay, I have no idea. So I talked to the guy from 3WS, and he'll come to me in a second, but it doesn't the name, and that's how tired I am at this point. And he just tells me the whole background. So can you tell me? He gives me the whole thing. He was prepared out of his gourd. I'm like, for a red carpet? I was taught by the best 1-2 questions, no more, no less. So it was a lot more than 1 or 2 questions when you only got certain people, because the handlers kind of kept people away from certain people on the carpet, or they were busy wanting to get the interviews. And I don't know who the entire media list was, because I arrived at a certain time where I'm at the end of the carpet. So I'm like, and it's a pretty small carpet. So we're really crunched in. And luckily it wasn't outside. That would have been a situation. But I had no idea about the film at that point. I'm glad I didn't, because I was very blown away by the story. But I kind of, and here's the funniest thing. My daughter and I try to become extras on this film. The only extras thing I ever showed up for, we showed up too late, or we wouldn't wait in line for extras. They said, oh, don't worry, we have your name on your list, and you're going to possibly hear. And, you know, I talked to so many extras there. Oh, I always get picked. Everyone and their mother showed up for the Mr. Rogers casting for extras. It was just packed beyond belief. I guess not even knowing the premise of the film. So I had no idea about it. And I will tell you tonight on the show without giving away all the secrets. But again, this is the thing where I can go on the fly, because trust me, by the time they get to me, I already know everything about the film and all that. And it'll come to me in a second who the guy from 3WS is, but I don't remember now, but I think it's Johnny something, and it'll come to me. Johnny Hartwell. So, see, I knew it finally I would come up with. Good old Ian,
right.
And he was on B94 back in the day. So I'm next to a veteran journalist. Local. Remember the word local. We podcasters, nationally syndicated radio hosts that are independent, are treated like, who are you? When the truth of the matter is all their interviews will disappear, and Michael will be on my Facebook page seeing it come back up 3 months from now, 6 months from now, right. 2 years from now, 8 years from now, where people will be going to my internet radio station or wherever. Okay. All right, next question.
So let me tell you a little secret.
Yes.
There's a documentary about this.
Really? So you saw it?
Yes. So I knew the premise before the movie came out.
Interesting. Okay.
About this journalist. I won't go too much into it, but that's how I knew what it was about.
Oh, wow. I have to. Is that the one that came out that was a year ago that was like really popular? I mean, really did promotion. And yeah. I remember they were doing the whole national scene about it, but I didn't know that was based on it. But part of the documentary just talked about this, but not the entire documentary. It's more about Mr. Rogers' whole, but you knew that story. Okay. All right. So next question, but that's a great point that you made on that end, but I'm able to cover myself, and trust me, I ask questions that these people come up with, these long questions. I'm going to ask something like, and I'll talk to you guys about what you're going to hear. Because after Mike and I are done chatting, get ready to hear the red carpet firsthand on the Neil Haley shows. And Thinking Through the Trees show is kind of updating us for this red carpet. And I hope there'll be many more red carpets to come. Go ahead.
So now, what was your favorite question to ask somebody?
Oh, that's a great question. I would ultimately say your favorite story of Mr. Rogers. And Rick Seeback did one, and then I asked him to do a funny one, and he was awesome. And guess what? I'm a kind of gutsy kind of guy. I guess that's how I've been able to get to where I am today. I went up to Rick and says, "Hey, we're Facebook friends." He looked at me like, and I said, "Hey, I'm from the Neil Haley show," but I kind of broke the because again, and I said, "So have do you ever look at my newsfeed?" Because if he did look at my newsfeed, he would see me, but I'm sure he doesn't even manage his own Facebook page. But yeah, hey, we're Facebook friends. That's the funniest thing. I if I could give you my list of who Facebook friends, but at least some of the celebrities will do it. But yeah, then we just talked, Rick and I, and that was a great interview, because the fact is Rick wasn't on the red carpet, which I thought was a travesty of justice. This guy is a bigger name than everyone on that, in my opinion. If you talk WQED and you go after Mr. Rogers, Rick Seeback's next, right or wrong?
Yeah, I have to agree with you, especially now.
But he knew Mr. Rogers more than anybody else.
And
the guy wasn't on the red carpet. And I was very surprised by that. And either he didn't want to, as a very humble guy, because he was the one that was kind of the MC of everything, but yet not on the red carpet. And maybe he didn't want to do interviews. Who knows? But after I saw Johnny Hartwell go and grab an interview with him, I grabbed an interview as well. And Rick was very cordial to do that interview. But I broke the ice by, "Hey, we're Facebook friends." And he probably looked at me like, "Are you kidding me?" But hey, you know, that's the kind of funny guy I am. And, you know, I mean, and if he looked at my celebrity list, he'd understand I do have Facebook friends that are celebrities. Shout out to a lot of the Sopranos, but also shout out to Sean Stasiak, Duke the Dumpster, Drosy. The list goes on and on. But let's go ahead to another question. But again, Rick was great because Rick really told us, but I just had an idea when I showed up. Here's my preparation. I just want a story of Mr. Rogers, because that's what people want to know. something that we don't know about Mr. Rogers. We don't care about, we ultimately don't want a long-term question to a writer or a director or producer. And you know what really made me sad? To know some of these people never watched Mr. Rogers, like the artists never did. And so I was disappointed in that fact that some of them are Mr. Rogers fans, or, you know, or their kids weren't. And but the writers definitely were. But go ahead to the next question.
So on that note, the writers. So you said, did they grow up watching Mr. Rogers?
No, they did not grow up watching Mr. Rogers. They're pretty young. I think they're younger than I am. They have a story. Okay. I guess it was Noah became a father. And Noah is the, I think he was in the movie for a little bit too. Noah became a father, and he basically came up with the idea of Mr. Rogers. And we're going to hear this more in the interview. He came up with the idea of Mr. Rogers from a, he was nervous as being a first time parent, and he stumbled on to Mr. Rogers, and he was hooked from that and wanted to learn more about him. And you have to listen to the interview in a lot of ways. And again, I didn't get to really truly interview the writers. It's going to be interesting once I cut and paste and put all this stuff together after the smoke clears. This will be the entire red carpet airing tonight. I mean, tomorrow. But everything else, when we do the individuals, the writers at the end had a good conversation with my wife. So my wife was interviewing them and they're talking about our kids. And it was kind of funny. Because, again, they everyone just hounded these guys. They were going for a job. I got to get an interview with the writers. I got to get the producers. And I'm set, and I got 30 minutes. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, I want to interview everybody. I want to have as much opportunity to talk to all these people because everyone's going to have a story. All right, next question.
All right, so on that note, who was the most interesting person you interviewed?
Tom Janone, because Tom played one of my favorite characters from The Americans.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just a huge fan of Matthew Rhys. And I brought up how great of an actor he is. And what did you think of Matthew playing your character? And he put him over. And I said, hey, I'm a huge fan of of The Americans. And I said, he is just an unbelievable actor. His ability to play this sadistic character and change. And he said, this same thing. Neil, he does this, and he's just phenomenal. And I just went and just connected with Tom in only a short period of time, but I really wanted to know something like that. Instead of the popcorn question, I can't stand it. And then I had this lady that was asking six questions, and she said, what's your next project going to be? I'm like, this is not your show. This is a red carpet, for gosh sakes. And I'm trying to be kind of like, okay, I guess this is not your first rodeo. You maybe have had a handful of interviews in 10 years. I've had over 8,000 or 9,000. You don't ask those questions if you want to get the most important information from it. But Tom was really interesting. I would rank Tom out because Tom was the most genuine, and he was the one I really could connect with in a lot of ways. A lot of people were popcorny, like, hey, they were talking to so many people on the carpet. But Tom, I just asked a question. I'm sure that no one really asked him because a lot of these people are not, you know, connoisseurs of streaming and all that stuff. You got next question.
Right, and you are connoisseur.
I guess I am. I just finished a show with one of my favorite actors from that I like. It's called Strike Something from Cinemax, and it's phenomenal. It's a great
Strike Force.
But I only watched three seasons, so I'm not going to pay for the rest.
Right.
But yes.
I've watched all seasons.
Okay.
It's a phenomenal show.
It's a very but again, some of the parts, it does not, it's not very children friendly at all. And it surprises me. But again, I mean, you can't, it's just a really good, I mean, really well written show. But I would go to the next question.
Yes. So did you interview Mrs. Rogers?
No, I did not. And it's funny, GJ goes and says to me at the end, because Alita, his wife, who owns Women of Faith today, interviewed her. And over at Mr. Rogers Studios, he said, Neil, you just can go to Mrs. Rogers' house.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shake-up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyrus Mission USA.
Cyber Station USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcasters' features, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. Cyber Station USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA, always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
Allison interviewer. That's what he said.
Nice.
I don't know if he's joking or not, but honestly, you probably could, because if you saw the film, she probably opened up her door. I could just go and do a nice television long time interview with her. I hope that ever happens. We don't know. Again, we got to look at the handler, Bill Eisler, and say, hey, Bill, can we make this happen? He was a pretty nice guy, but no, I did not. And that was disappointing, but I made the biggest mistake ever. I cared about seeing the film versus staying on the red carpet. And I will never do that again. I don't care if it's the greatest film in the world. I could see it again, for gosh sakes. Stay on that red carpet, network as much as possible, and then you maybe would have got 1,000 more interviews. But, hey, you learn your lesson that you don't say, because, see, I guess, don't bring a guest either, sorry to my wife, because ultimately I wouldn't have cared if I go to the film. I would just have been hammering out, but I was thinking, hey, she wants to see this film. And so I'm like, okay, yeah.
Right. Exactly. You want to take somebody who's going to sit there and ask questions with you.
Right, right. No, that would have been funny, you on the carpet. But also, ultimately, if I told my wife, by the way, you're not going to a red carpet event and I'm leaving you with all the kids, that's not happening. That's why I didn't make SopranoCon. And and hey, you know, shout out to Michael Motta. Great, great, great. Oh my gosh, this show. But again, I got big news coming soon on that. Okay, good. Next question.
So let me. Who was all there? What celebrities?
Okay, so the Pittsburgh icons. Let's go rank first. Franco Harris, and Franco comes up right to me. I look at him. He stares me down. Comes in. Walks in. Shakes my hand. Really, I mean, I'm like, okay. He didn't go up to anybody else. Came and shook my hand. And I'm not going to say, hey, he's a big fan of me on Bethel Park Television. I'm not going to say that he saw me on TV in Bethel Park. But no, but he was just really respectful. I think when he sees a big guy, he's an athlete. I'm a former athlete. You know, we shake hands. A great guy. And one of the things my wife did not do, we were in the elevator to go up from the parking lot, and that's how I got his number, and we're going to end up having an interview at one point, because I always ask for the story. The first thing is, I don't bug Franco at all to interview him, but at the end, when we still have a conversation, I said, hey, I'm a journalist, I have my own radio show, nationally syndicated, just had, you know, the top 13 in The Voice, went and said all this stuff, would you ever be interested in doing an interview? He says, oh, what about? Like, he doesn't want anything about Joe Paterno and all that. You know that for a fact. No, I said, about your career, about all these different things you're doing, all your projects. Just a nice piece. Oh, sure. And his wife or girlfriend gave me her number, and I could text her. Boom. But the funny thing is, he walks in to the thing singing It's a Beautiful Day in This Neighborhood. My wife does not record that. That would have gone viral for sure. Franco Harris singing It's a Beautiful Day in This Neighborhood. So he, yes. But again, it didn't happen. So there you go. You bring the right camera person. And I'm like, I'm not. And oh, well. All right. So that was the best. So then Sally Wiggin was there.
Of course.
So, but I didn't get a chance to talk to Sally. I didn't interview Sally either. So again, you know, we have stories about Channel 4, but that's not for this program.
No.
But Sally loves Michael beyond belief. Then I'm just trying to think who else was there that was well known. That disappointed me in certain ways. I mean, I know that some of the people were hiding, but we really didn't have huge celebrities. And I think that goes back to the fact is whoever's inviting them, I think the red carpet tickets are based on the guests. I think it's based on the people that are sponsors are invited, and it's also based on the people walking the carpet. If you don't have many Pittsburghers, I don't think you get as many tickets of who's who Pittsburghers coming to the event. Who knows? Again,
right.
You know, but it would have been great to see more people that really had that true relationship with Mr. Rogers.
And, well, the fact is that, you know, Jason Momoa, Aquaman, is in Pittsburgh doing a show for Netflix, I think. The people that were doing this should have invited him.
Yes, I agree. But is it a different fee? It's not Sony, is it?
I don't know, but...
Yeah. See, this is going to be interesting, you know, the kind of conversations we have. But again, this is what is fun about this. We definitely wonder, and it's not, I don't think it's a Sony thing. I don't even know who makes that decision on who comes and doesn't. And, you know, I think that the New York event was just gigantic. And who knows if a lot of those people went to New York. And that's the thing you're thinking.
Right.
Because New York was really the premiere. This was just a screening. Today was the screen. Yesterday was the screening. The New York already happened before that, and they premiered it. They premiered it in Toronto. Yeah. So they really gave Pittsburgh a premiere, a screening, but not really. And honestly, and we'll talk a little bit about the film real quickly. Pittsburgh really was in the film, but it's not really highlighted the story. So even though Mr. Rogers is a cornerstone of Pittsburgh, and a lot of it was filmed in Pittsburgh, it really wasn't about Pittsburgh.
Not at all. Which is, that's totally fine.
Yeah.
But just to see what it's like from an outsider's point of view.
Exactly.
It's fascinating.
Definitely. All right. So next question, Michael. I'll have to get you going and think about what you're going to ask next.
Yeah, I've got to think about this for a second. So, the actor that you love, so you didn't even get to talk to him? Was he there?
No, none of the celebrities were. Sony already tried to hook me up. They didn't want me to go today to the tour because they couldn't get me a one-on-one. It was not time enough, but they want to put me on a radio tour next week for a star. I wonder who it is. I'm hoping either Rise or Hanks. That's what I'm hoping for. So I'm going to reach back out to Sony, send them.
Fanboy over him?
No, again, come on now. Next week on my show, by the way, Chicago's coming on, and also John O'Hurley, all about the Thanksgiving Day parade and all those different things. So, no, I want to definitely, you just never know what celebrities will come on next. But no, that didn't happen. So there was no real act. I guess the only actor, is really the creative people behind it. And that goes back to the arts of Pittsburgh, that they probably saw that because they were the ones that really created the scene of Pittsburgh. And all the different things, especially Shaler, that was really highlighted in the film. And I think the funny thing is they really didn't film in New York at all. They filmed in Pittsburgh. But the film, half of it was in New York. So, meaning, even though it was in New York, it's Pittsburgh, that they knew about being in Pittsburgh for 3 months filming that film. The writers, directors, producers, they just knew that it had to come to Pittsburgh to say, here's my baby. And that's the difference about the creatives compared to the actors. The actors are on to other projects and different things. They're probably booked for just the big thing, and then there you go. All right.
Right, 2 weeks prior to the
who knows
opening.
Yeah, I guess we're trying to learn from Entourage, right? That's how we're learning it. But all right, go next question.
Oh, is that what we're doing? Learning from Entourage. So what's that make me, Johnny?
Exactly. But honestly,
quest.
No, but it's funny. No, it's just funny just how what you learn from these experiences, for sure. But like I said, and I was looking at the list, I'm like, oh yeah, it's a pretty cool list. But come on now, I can do this in my PJs, a big star. But hey, you know, it is what it is. Like this week, if we rank specific things, I had two Olympians on yet today. Future Olympians, they're not, but they're like world record people. But yeah, all right, go to the next question.
So where is this rate? I mean,
this movie, if I gave a straight take, the first 10 minutes was slow, the rest was breathtaking, a tremendous job. Matthew Rhys, in my opinion, did an Academy Award performance. Tom Hanks did an Academy Award performance. The story, you see, you're seeing me a big fan of Matthew because I missed the. We got to bring back the Americans. Come on now.
He's been in a lot of stuff.
No, I've only seen him in that. I probably have seen him in other things, but I'm just saying that the story was tremendous. It was very powerful. Tremendous acting. Tremendous story. Tremendous music. Showing forgiveness, but it's not for kids, by the way. But I if you read Tony Norman's report on this, and if you're friends with him on Facebook like myself, but I'm sure Tony Norman does not know who I am, but who knows, you know, I'm always in the news feeds, but if he manages his own Facebook, he knows who I am. He wrote a really good thing on Facebook about the film, and he thinks that it's got a shot for sure. But I think that the thing I liked most about the film was it's a tearjerker, it's very powerful, and it shows the truth of Mr. Rogers. But the saddest thing about Mr. Rogers you have to see in the film, because ultimately he changed so many people's lives, and yet his humanity is shown in this film. And I really look at this and say to myself that Bill Eisler and everyone deciding to allow the story to come out is fantastic, to truly know who Mr. Rogers is. And I guess from the documentary, it kind of showed that they weren't as fearful of protecting who his identity was when he was alive. But ultimately, the humanity of the man and what he had to go through in a lot of ways, and how he had difficulty and challenges and struggles, and just really, really surprising in the film. And I guess I got to watch the documentary to say, oh, I see now. But definitely would see it again, and I definitely recommend everyone to go see the film. And thank you, Sony, and again, Women of Faith, for the opportunity to now play the red carpet event. Now I got to go into the editing floor and check out different things because I just kept it rolling. So a lot of it's quiet, because you never know what you're going to get from the story, and do the good old edits and cut it and run it tomorrow. The day of the release, by the way, Friday, tomorrow, or today, if you're listening on syndication and on my networks, it releases in theaters on November 22nd. All theaters, check it out. A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. And check it out, Facebook, Twitter, and all those places. Well, I appreciate it. Michael, next week, no show. It's Thanksgiving. The week after, I'll be working on a big one before I head out to Houston, Texas, for some events, and then December, keep going. All right.
Look at that.
Houston. All right. In Vegas in March. But all right. You're saying, uh-oh. Okay. So good talking to you, Mike, and we'll talk soon, man.
You too. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. That was, again, Thinking Through the Trees, Neil Hayes Show. Now, here's the clips. So tell me a story about Mr. Rogers.
Wow. There's so many stories about Mr. Rogers. You know, I got to interview him right when I came to WQED 32 years ago.
Wow.
It was going to be the 20th anniversary of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood in 1988. And so in 1987, I was asked to interview him, and I was the new guy.
Right.
But it was really an honor, and Fred suggested that we go to this little apartment that he kept over on Ellsworth Avenue.
Okay.
In what I call one of the old lady apartment buildings, the Cathedral Mansions. And we went there, and I interviewed him for 3 hours one afternoon. And it was such an honor and such a great thing, and got to talk to him. But, you know, I think we tend especially now with all this going on, to forget that he was really instrumental in starting WQAD.
Yeah, he really did. He helped put you on the map in a lot of ways, right?
No, I mean, he was there when we went on the air in 54.
Really? Oh, my gosh.
He came in 53, actually.
Wow.
He was one of the founding people of WQED. He was hired out of NBC in New York. He was a floor manager training to be a director, and he heard about this project in Pittsburgh, and since he was from Latrobe, it all worked out.
Yeah. Wow, so yeah, and a funny story.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA, always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
Story to share about Mr. Rogers real quick.
Wow, a funny story.
That some people might not know.
Well, I was interested, you know, I didn't know, I mean, as much as work as I'd done with Mr. Rogers, I didn't know this whole 143 thing, that he weighed 143 pounds his whole life.
Okay.
Yes, he wear, and then he also interprets 143 to mean I love you. One letter, four letters, three letters.
That's great.
And Bill Eisler just told me this evening that the movie length is 143.
Oh my!
So they, you know, everybody. It's a new thing that I didn't know all the time, but it's typical Fred that he was, you know, sort of interested in that and always kept amazingly fit.
Yes.
He was a fat little kid.
Oh really?
Who grew up to be a skinny adult, and he stayed skinny his whole adult life.
So best places we can connect with you, where can we go so people can check out some of the new projects you're doing and stuff like that?
Well, actually, I think, you know, if you go on YouTube, there's and look up, there's two things. There's one called The Origins of Daniel Striped Tiger.
Okay.
And that is Fred and Josie Carey, who were two of the people at the beginning talking about that. And Daniel is still, you know, he's an animated hero on PBS.
Right.
And he was on WQED the first day of broadcast.
Okay.
And he was supposed to be a cuckoo. He lived in a cuckoo clock. That's how he ends up in a grandfather clock in the final show. But that, and then also I did a show called Nebby, My Interview with Fred.
Okay.
It's also on YouTube. So those are two good places
to
look.
But your projects, any projects you're doing right now?
Well, I'm working on my last Nebby, which would be Nebby number 8. And it's about my fall last August. I fell and ruptured my quadricep tendon.
Oh, my.
And I'm calling this my 7 weeks in McGee, because I was in McGee Hospital for 7 weeks.
Well, I love all the projects you do. Big fan of yours, and I appreciate meeting you. And
we'll
have to have a longer interview to learn some story about you.
Excellent.
But tonight's about Mr. Rogers.
It is about Mr. Rogers.
Right,
thank you.
Take care.
Good deal.
Do you have a story to share about Mr. Rogers in a way of when you grew up watching him?
when I grew up watching it. Well, I'll share this. I'm 51, so obviously I grew up watching the show, but seeing the documentary a couple of years ago, the thing that struck me and brought me to tears was a question that he posed to a child. He got down on his knee and he said, "Would you like to tell me about what you're struggling with?" Not it wasn't a demand. It wasn't tell me about it. It was an invitation.
Wow.
And that's what moved me to tears, to be inspired to create this portrait that I made of him this past year. So,
and you're excited about seeing the film, right?
Very excited. I haven't seen it yet.
I'm really excited too.
I've had opportunities to see the preview, you know, prior to it. I said no, I want to see it in the theater.
So
I think that's where I will cry the most with other people and community, right?
Right. Well, I'm nationally syndicated all over the country and stuff. So is there a place people can connect with your art and stuff, a place they can visit you?
There is. The art is currently hanging at WQED where he filmed all the episodes. And then from there it goes across town to Pittsburgh Theological Seminary, and then this summer we'll hang at Crayola Crayons for another 4 months.
Okay.
It's been on tour. Started at PBS in Virginia. It's going all over the place.
All right, fantastic. It's nice meeting you.
Yeah, good to meet you.
All right, what do you make of all this?
I love it. I think it's terrific tribute to Fred. I worked with Fred for a dozen years or more, and I think this is exactly what he deserves.
Well, I got a simple question. What does Fred Rogers mean to you?
Genuine, honest, down-to-earth person. Exactly the same off-screen as he was on-screen. Didn't change a hair.
Oh, wow. Do you have a favorite story?
Well, I was telling him about... I did all the films for the picture that he had. The picture on the wall that would show all the stuff that was going on that he wanted to talk about. For instance... He had Van Cliburn, the concert pianist, on as a guest. A month before Mr. Cliburn came on the show, they sent me to New York City to the Steinway factory to film how they make a piano.
Wow.
You remember that one? He remembers that one. Well, guess what? That's my film. I went up there, I filmed how they shaped the boards, how they put these strings in, how they put the pedals on. Now, he has Mr. Cliburn on, they play a piano, they talk, they do some stuff, and then Fred turns to Van Cliburn and he says, "Mr. Cliburn, do you ever wonder how they make a piano? Let's ask picture. Bingo. That picture becomes a movie screen. I got 5 minutes of film on how a piano's made.
Wonderful memory.
That's good. Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Enjoy
the film.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. So what's your favorite story of Mr. Rogers?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, I have one, but it takes a while. Do you want me to tell it?
Yeah, you can tell it.
Okay. I'm just holding up the line.
No, not at all.
Okay. So when I first went to, the second time I went to interview Mr. Rogers, I came home, and my five-year-old son said he was really scared when I was gone. And I said, well, what, did you think the plane was going to crash or whatever? He said he was afraid somebody would want to marry me, would think I was pretty and would want to marry me, and I'd never come home. I thought that was hysterical.
That is.
So Fred calls a couple of days later. I'm like, oh, you're not going to believe this. Jonathan thought he was five. I said, Jonathan, because, you know, you're 5 years old, and that's what he's concerned about. He's concerned about kidnapping and forced matrimony, right? So I call Fred, and I'm telling Fred how hysterical this is. He was so quiet on the other end of the line. He was like, he wanted me to know. Fred wanted me to. He almost scolded me. He wanted me to know that even though my son's feelings were, his fears were not founded, his feelings were valid.
Oh my gosh.
And then I needed to, I didn't need to laugh off his feelings, but validate him. And I've taken that lesson, even though it was a scolding from Mr. Rogers, into every other relationship. Every feeling is valid.
Oh, that's so important.
Yeah, so important.
Because it means that you have, what Mr. Rogers did is he listened to people. He wanted to know what they truly felt, regardless of the child, adult, anyone.
Right, and feelings were valid. They weren't right. You know, he didn't put a value judgment on feelings. They weren't right or wrong, but they could be overwhelming. And so for a child especially, if they have overwhelming feelings, he wanted to give them ways to express how they felt without hurting them or anyone else.
And then that he's inspired so many people. I remember one of my co-hosts, I do an education talk show, and if he knew today I was on the red carpet to talk to these people, he'd be so impressed, because all he would mention all the time as an educator, you know how many educators Mr. Rogers has motivated, especially male teachers, to the profession.
Right, and it's because he had the background. It's like he had the background in child development. He went to seminary, so every aspect of him was cultivated so that he could give everything that he wanted to give to children. So it wasn't a simple show. I didn't grow up with the show, so I discovered it when my son was two, and I thought, wow, this guy is deep. You know, he knows what my background's in psychology. I'm like, he knows what he's talking about. So I started becoming like completely mesmerized by the show.
And what made you want to write the book, that the show? Or?
Well, what happened was I went to interview him. I'm the first person who ever interviewed him about his faith on television.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so that was in 1994, and then we became friends after that. I went back to visit. We would call and write. Mm-hmm. So I met him 9 years before he passed away, and we were friends that whole time.
Oh, that's tremendous. Tremendous story. Where can we purchase your book? Best place to go.
You can get it on Amazon.
Best place. You have a website too?
I do, amyhollingsworth.com.
Yeah, because that's perfect to plug for you, especially for nationally or internationally. People want to pick up your books.
So. Oh, yeah, I would love for them to read it, because it really talks about all the spiritual lessons he taught me over our friendship.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
Great.
It's nice meeting you.
Great to meet you.
Take care. Yeah, I know you're ready to grab them. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Tell me your favorite story of Mr. Rogers, because I'm going to plug that in. I'll put that in there.
You know what? I always say I've cried 10 times in my adult life, 3 times when my 3 kids were born, when my 2 parents passed away, and the other 5 times have something to do with Mr. Rogers. My father and Mr. Rogers passed away roughly 30 days. And so, you know, when he passed away and as my father was sick, it made me think what kind of person I should be, what kind of father I should be, what kind of broadcaster. So, yeah, he's a touchstone.
Kila, pleasure to meet you all.
Nice to meet you, too.
So can I ask for a coffee? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Can I ask you all? How did this dynamic duo even come to begin?
Yes. We got set up on a creative blind date.
Really?
Yeah. 13 years ago, a mutual friend of ours was sick of hearing about the same book that Mike and I were reading, and basically realized, will you guys just get coffee and leave me alone? And that was 13 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so how do you guys work out creative conflict resolution?
Well, I'm substantially larger than him.
Yeah.
Substantially.
Yeah, but I fight dirty.
He's substantially smarter.
Yeah.
So, you know.
No, I mean, you know, writing isn't just sitting in front of a blank page and filling it with words. Mm-hmm. Writing is finding out what we're actually going to write about. Yeah. Why it's important to us. What's the way in? That conversation then becomes something that we end up putting on the whiteboard in our office.
Yes.
That becomes an outline. That eventually becomes an outline that's in a strip form.
Yes.
Then it becomes a script. Then it becomes the worst first draft of all time that's ever existed in the entire history of screenplays.
No one will ever see.
And then we start making it less bad.
Uh-huh.
We make it better.
Uh-huh.
And then eventually we show it to people.
Yes.
Then they embarrass us with their notes.
Yes.
And then eventually we're able to show it to people who we actually need to say yes to make the movie.
Yes. Now, 2 quick last questions. What made you want to tackle the story of Mr. Rogers, and then what work went into synthesizing it from the 2014, hey, we want to write about this article, to now?
Yeah, I mean, the genesis of this was my insecurities as a new father. You know, I had a newborn and a two-year-old. And I didn't really know what I was doing, as I think most new parents do. And I, in a moment of desperation, I was like, oh, Mr. Rogers knows something about kids. And I put an episode on the television, and my two-year-old turned to the TV and started listening in this incredibly profound way, which she has never listened to me that way since. But I called Micah and I said, like, this guy is doing a thing that we need to learn about. I mean, our philosophy is that writing is just an excuse to learn. So we just took a leap into Fred Rogers, and I think realized pretty quickly that he was not the best subject for a traditional biopic. He was unwaveringly awesome for 74 years, which is not, you know, your lead character in a movie. And that led us to people like Tom Juneau, and who had his life changed by Fred. Now, there were many of them. And I think that you know, led us to The Estate, and to Bill Eisler, and the Fred Rogers Company, and Joanne Rogers, who are, you know, were not interested at all in us making a movie about Fred.
Yeah.
And that took a long time for them to realize that we were pure of intent, and that we thought this was special, and that we wanted to work with them. not against them. And ultimately, we're here 10 years later in Pittsburgh after having shot the movie here with them side by side. So it's we're incredibly grateful.
That's okay. We get some bucks.
Quick question. How did you get Bill Eisler? How did you convince him to greenlight this?
Well, when we first met him, he said, well, you guys seem like you're pretty nice. But just so you know, there will never, ever, ever be a Fred Rogers movie ever. So now we can talk.
But sure, come on out to Pittsburgh. We'll have sand dabs.
And and we ate some sand dabs of Bill Eisler, and that began, I would say, like a six-year process of our just not going away. We just had a habit of showing up, of sticking with it. Our producers in Big Beach were there, and it was just we were just steadfast. And eventually, we softened Bill.
I looked last night, and a year and a half later. He let us meet Joanne Rogers. It took him a year and a half after our first time we met him.
Well, you know, as Pittsburghers, we're pretty protective of.
You should be. And that's, I was saying, like, that's looking back. You know, it's frustrating at the time because you want to make this movie, you want to tell the story, but looking back, there's no other way.
We felt an enormous responsibility to get this movie right. Well, thank you guys.
Congratulations.
You two are the reason why I came, because I really wanted to talk to you. So thank you very much.
It's got to make
you
congratulations.
It is.
You have to be happy with the end result, right?
I still can't believe it. We have to have people go see the movie to watch it to tell us that it's actually real. It's like, did we actually make it, or is this all in our head?
Exactly. Exactly.
A reminder that it's no longer a dream. This is of Noah.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shake-up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyber Station USA.
Cyber Station USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. Cyber Station USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop-shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple. Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA, always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The cyber station, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
National Syndicated Show, real quick question. How do you think your character was portrayed? What is your take on that?
I think that Matthew's brilliant.
Yes,
I love him. I think he's brilliant. And I didn't know how brilliant until...
He's amazing.
Until I saw how he played that character. Because I met Matthew last year for about 2 hours. Now, I met him other times. I mean, we talked and stuff.
Right.
But Fred, I mean, I met him for like a two-hour interview last year. And you don't know what's going to happen. And then you see the movie for the first time, and he's, I mean, he, people who watch it and myself go, wow, he's playing you, you know, and he does. And he adds there's a level of humanity.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, you could follow this whole movie sound off just by looking at Matthew's eyes.
Well, I saw his talent in the Americans.
Yeah.
I was a huge fan of the Americans.
Me too.
Streamed all
Me
of
too.
It. And he just really...
He's amazing.
He's amazing.
He's amazing.
He can live a character and develop that. And I'm excited to see that in the
And
film
how he
today.
Can communicate that to, you know, to an audience. Just by a glance.
Exactly. Just like
it's incredible.
At like,
And so
I mean, I was like, wow. But the, you know.
Watch it when you see. Have you seen the movie before?
No, I've not seen it.
Okay, so you're gonna see it tonight.
Yes.
So when there's a scene when he's drinking with his father, watch the way he looks at the glass of bourbon. That's all I'm telling you.
Okay.
It's fantastic.
All right. Well.
All right.
Thanks. I really appreciate the time.
Good luck.
Thank you.
You know, other ones that are really high. They're just certain, you know, celebrity authors, and that's all it's really made for, and it's not really for the fans. This is for the fans and the authors, the people.
Absolutely.
And that's what I've seen in 10 years, and I love covering it. Now let's go to this. This is the kind of sequel to your first book, right? Am I correct?
That's right.
So tell me about why did you write the sequel to this book? What was the kind of reason?
You know, here's the thing. Ever since The Space Between Us, which was the original book, came out about 10 years ago, readers have been writing to me and asking for a sequel. They just wanted a continuation of the story of the two main characters, Sarah Dubash, this upper middle class woman living in Mumbai, India, and the domestic servant, Bhima, who worked for her for many years. And so the requests were always pouring in. And frankly, I never took them seriously because I guess I have too restless an imagination, and I couldn't conceive of sort of telling the same story twice. It was far more exciting to me to write, you know, new books with new plot lines and new characters and new stories to tell. So I never ever thought I would do a sequel. But I have to confess and say that over the years, there's this one very minor character in the original book. Her name is Parvati, and she is a vegetable vendor, you know, selling cauliflowers at the marketplace where Bhima used to shop for her upper middle class mistress in the first book.
Okay.
And Parvati doesn't even so much as have a line of dialogue in the original book. But over the years, you know, once in a while, I would just think of her and wonder who she was, who she is, and what her backstory is. I mean, what makes somebody so poor that all they can afford to do is sell 6 cauliflowers a day? And then one day, I literally woke up and I just knew who Parvati was and what her backstory was. You know, Eric, I'm just going to interrupt myself to say I'm getting tremendous feedback. Are you?
Not at all. We're good to go.
There's like a terrible echo in my ears.
Oh, it's got to be your line. I'm not hearing it at all, so I'll just make sure.
You're not. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's your phone.
All right.
Okay. No worries. We'll just make sure we edit that out.
But okay.
Just ignore it. Pretend like you have headset in your ears like I do.
Yeah, it's fine. I just want to make sure we were. So I'll just pick up where I left off, okay?
Okay.
So the minute I saw or felt this backstory, the minute I understood who this character was, what had happened to her in her childhood and in her life, I began to get very excited at the thought of actually doing a sequel to the original book. But only this time, I would introduce this new character and kind of pose her story next to Bhima's story. And I just had a hunch that if I did that, introduce these two women, both marginalized, both poor, both sort of the recipient of, you know, society's contempt and disdain. If I did that, they would have interesting things to say to one another and perhaps even something to teach one another about friendship and being vulnerable and basically not clinging to your secrets, which both women did. And hence the title, The Secrets Between Us. And it was like it was like a puzzle where it just, the final piece just clicked into place. And then I think I started writing the book that same afternoon. And, you know, within a few months, it was done.
Yeah.
That's how it came about.
And so that's so important to finally, it clicks and you say, okay, I'm able to do this. Let's go. Let's do this. And,
right.
And I think that's fabulous. But I think what your first book was able to do is tell a story of a lot of people don't understand about poverty. And when I think about poverty, I think that we ignore our world's poverty all the time as a country,
right.
States,
right.
And even Europe. And some of these shows like that are on Amazon now that I'm watching, especially like Jack Ryan and looking at other countries and the way they live. And this is a true story. Makes you think, holy cow, where you could walk out the street and you could get shot. And people are living like that in the United States, but not to the point where it's poverty all over the place. And that only a few, very, very few have the wealth. And that's just
right
in these developing countries. This is really scary and how we end that. And then you really kind of defined a caste system of what India used to be, and it still hasn't disappeared in ways.
Yeah, so I'll say a few things about this. One, my book is really not about the caste system, but it's very much about the class system. You know, as a writer, I'm more drawn to issues of class, and I have a feeling I know why. You know, class is inescapable in every society, including my country, the United States. You know, we like to pretend in America that we are a classless society, but of course we are nothing of the sort. And we are increasingly becoming, you know, a class-driven, divided society with very little occupational mobility. You know, one of the hallmarks of this country in the 50s, 60s, and 70s used to be that it didn't matter if you were born in poverty, you know, through the dint of hard work and education, you could rise above your circumstances.
Correct. And that's not
that is getting, well, it's getting harder and harder, and it's only true for a smaller and smaller segment of the population. So, you know, things are not as different between, say, a third world country like India and the U.S. as we would like to believe they are. Obviously, this is a much wealthier nation. But the difference, the main difference that I see is that in India, the poverty is inescapable. You yourself might live in a cocoon of privilege. You know, you might live on the 32nd floor of a skyscraper. But when you walk down into the streets, you will see a homeless person, you know, living on the streets. In this country, I think it's possible to turn a blind eye. You know, you can take a street that doesn't take you past the housing project, or you can roll up your car windows when you go through quote unquote a bad neighborhood, right? You can avoid those neighborhoods most of the time. That's the big difference. You know, poverty is not in your face and it's not visual the way it is in India. But that doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
No, it definitely does not. It does exist in so many places and in the places you least expect it, or the amount of wealth really a person has because of credit card debt, bankruptcy, all these things are just hidden in our country where people look
exactly
lots of money when they really don't.
And that's
a different form of poverty, isn't it?
It is, but you know, the mirror image of that, or the flip side of what you just said, which is a brilliant point about credit card debt and people, you know, living high on the hog when they really don't, you know, it's hollow from the inside. But the flip side of that is that just like there's a lot of secrecy surrounding poverty, there's also a lot of secrecy surrounding wealth, right? So somebody might get a huge inheritance from a parent or a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle, but they may never reveal it to their friends or neighbors. So it works both ways, I guess.
Yeah, because you think, oh, I got to keep up with the neighbors, and it wasn't from their job. They got it from an inheritance.
It's really weird. We are having this conversation because, like, 20 minutes before you called, I was reading an article on exactly this topic. It's like you're almost reading that article out loud to me. Strange coincidence.
I never read it, so it just goes back. Yeah. Loving conversations and interviewing so many people and talking to somebody about this, but it's just life. I mean, you know, amount, and we'll go back to your book, I apologize, but this is a great conversation to kind of show what you see when you write about India compared to what the United States is, even though it's very similar, yet we have different ways of masking it and making it different when there's just so much problems. Facebook in general makes people depressed. The amount of people in this country depressed probably versus India. What do you think of the difference in that end? Thinking about how many people are depressed because they don't have something and they have so much.
Well, I've always said that poverty, I've seen, you know, I've lived in depressed communities in the United States because I was a journalist for a long time. And that took me into homes and communities that, you know, otherwise I may.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio. The future.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.